Hello, folks, and welcome to today's lecture on gender and sexuality. First course I ever taught in sociology, beginning way back in 1980, was a course called Marriage and Family, and a big section of that class was gender and sexuality. So this is a subject that I know a fair bit about academically. It's an interesting subject, and I haven't taught the course in a long time, since 1984, but I've kept up with it. Family was one of my areas of specialization for my PhD. It wasn't my major area. My major areas were theory and the sociology of religion, but family was also one of my areas that I had to take comprehensive examinations in. So I did a fair amount of reading in it and took a lot of coursework in the subject as well. So let's talk about a few different aspects of this subject and try to approach it from a somewhat different direction than the book takes, although perhaps overlapping a bit with some of the things the book talks about. First, the difference between gender and sex. It's a controversial subject. Many people have strong views on it. It has been researched a lot by people in my field, by sociologists. We know quite a bit about it, but there is also a lot that we don't know about it. So it is somewhat mysterious. For example, you know, where does sex end and where does gender begin? When you're talking about sex, you're talking about X and Y chromosomes, ultimately, and what the results are of those X and Y chromosomes, including hormones and reproductive functions and primary and secondary sexual characteristics and so forth. When we're talking about gender, we're talking about behavior, what people actually do. It's hard to know where one ends and the other begins, because a lot of what we do is, or at least appears to be, influenced by our brains. A lot of research has gone into the subject, and the subject of neurology, or the study of the brain, has had some influence in recent years on sociology, as we've tried to understand the interface, the place where gender and sex meet, which is a very complex issue. It's too simplistic to say that gender and sex are entirely separate. They're not. But it's also too simplistic to say that they are just the same. That's also not true. There is some evidence of an influence of the brain and hormones on behavior. For example, we know, well, let me give you a personal example from my own life. Back when I got my driver's license, back in ancient history, I was in the New York City area. I was born and raised in New York City. And I was amazed at how high the insurance rates were, even by comparison to the rates I pay now here in Kansas. They were high, and I'm not talking about adjusting for inflation. I'm talking about real money. They were high. Like back in 1974, just for basic collision, I had to pay $600 a month. That's a lot of money, especially back then. Then, 4 years later, my sister got her license, and she had to pay no insurance at all. She was automatically covered under my parents' policy, which made me somewhat annoyed, I must say. Didn't really understand it. I do now. It struck me as being extraordinarily unfair. Doesn't strike me as being unfair anymore. It just so happens that males 25 and younger have a high rate of auto accidents. They are actually the highest risk category for auto accidents. Men generally are worse drivers than women. Part of that may be socialization, meaning the way people are raised. But part of that appears also to be human biology. For example, the hormone testosterone, which does make males much more aggressive. So, you know, in fact, when you give people more testosterone, they become more aggressive. There have been studies in this. When you give women testosterone, they become more aggressive as well. So, testosterone does have an effect on human behavior. Testosterone is an aspect of sexuality, not gender. And yet, as an aspect of sexuality, it has a definite impact on human behavior. Another question, unrelated. How many sexes are there? Well, the answer to that question is surprisingly complex. If you ask the question reproductively, there are two sexes, male and female, because you need XX and XY to produce a child. On the other hand, if you look at sex chromosomally, then it becomes a bit more complex. And you get into the issue of what is called intersex. There are people who are born intersex, which includes a category that used to be called, but no longer is called, hermaphrodites, meaning people who have the primary sexual characteristics of both men and women, or both boys and girls. But it also includes people with different types of hormonal traits. For example, men are XY, women are XX, but there are people who are XXY, XYY, and so on. And so some people have actually tried to count the number of sexes, and there's no real agreement as to how many. But if you look at sex genetically, rather than reproductively, you end up with an awful lot of different sexes. So again, it makes the subject a bit more complex. One final thing, gestation, the development of the fetus in the womb. If you look at sex gestationally, there is only one sex. You may know this already. I would ordinarily ask my students in class, do you know? And usually at least one person would know. And the answer to it is female. That is because in the early weeks and months of gestation, all fetuses look female. The differentiation or distinguishing between males and females doesn't occur until later on in gestation. So, from that standpoint, you could say that there is only one sex, and that one sex is female. Now, gender, on the other hand, is complex as well, for a variety of reasons. One is that we generally think of, in the Western world, of gender and sex as being associated. So men are expected to be masculine, women are expected to be feminine. In recent years, we become somewhat more open to a bit more of sexual diversity, but still not that much. We really haven't come that far on that issue, not as far as some people think. If you look at the Lakota Sioux Native Americans, they had four distinct genders. They had masculine, they had feminine, then they had the masculine two-spirit and the feminine two-spirit. Now, a masculine man would be a hunter. A feminine woman would be a mother, primarily. A feminine two-spirit might be a mother, but she might also be a hunter. A male two-spirit might be a hunter, but he might also be a child carer. Now, today, among many Native Americans, there has been an association made between being two-spirited and being gay or lesbian. That does not appear to be the original usage of the term, but it's not for me to say how people should use terms. That's certainly up to them. But it does appear that originally that it was not a reference exactly to sexual identity, sexual orientation, or sexual preference, terms which all mean the same thing, meaning whether a person is straight, lesbian, gay, or bisexual. It was a reference to actual behavior, to what kinds of tasks people performed. Similarly, in Japan, there is a third sex. That third sex is for men. And in the United States, we would generally call those men effeminate. They don't have that concept. But to us, we would see it that way. But they actually see it as a third gender. So the question is, how many genders are there? The answer is, there is no answer. There can be as many genders that a society wishes to construct. Gender is a social construction. It is constructed by us as we interact with each other, as we interact with our past, as we interact with people in other societies, as we change, as we grow, and as we develop. So gender is a very complex subject. So just as there can be many sexes, depending upon your definition of sex, or there can only be one sex or two sexes, there can also be many different genders. Facebook, for example, now recognizes many different distinct genders. I looked at that list that Facebook had of different genders, And some of them were simply names for the same thing. But I guess they figured that, well, if a person calls themselves by something, they would just put that name in there. But factually, in many cases, the different genders in Facebook, some of them, are really names for the same gender. Now, when it comes to the issue of sexual identity, orientation, or sexual preference, that's a subject which we have only recently begun to talk about in an open way. When I was growing up, the subject was never even addressed. It was a mum's the word kind of thing. You simply didn't talk about it in polite company. In fact, the American Psychiatric Association classified homosexuality as a psychiatric disorder. In 1980, at the annual meeting of the American Psychiatric Association, and it is the American Psychiatric Association which produces the diagnostic and statistical manual which is used for diagnosing mental disorders in the United States, people protested outside the meeting. Mostly a lot of gays, lesbians, bisexuals. Around that time, it was beginning to be more open to talk about things like being gay and lesbian, whereas it was not in the past. And what they did is they protested, and they wanted homosexuality to be taken out of the manual. And they won. They won. And it was. So since 1980, homosexuality is no longer considered to be a psychiatric disorder, which raises questions about, well, then what are psychiatric disorders? You know, are psychiatric disorders real, or are they social constructions? And I think the answer to that question is probably multifaceted. One other aspect to this. There was a well-known pianist when I was growing up, probably before most of your times. His name was Liberace. Some of you, I don't know, I can't see you, I don't know how old you are, so some of you who may be closer to my age may know who Liberace is, or you may have read about him or heard about him. He's probably the best pianist, pardon me, the best pianist, took a sip of water, that we have produced in the United States. And he was a very colorful person. He had a very sparkling personality. He dressed in these suits with sequins in them. He always had a candelabra on the piano. And he played the piano in a very colorful way, where he would raise his hands high off the keyboard. So he was very ostentatious about his piano playing. I believe it was People magazine, although I could be wrong about the magazine, but some magazine had an article which said that Liberace was gay. Liberace sued them. At that time, being gay was the kiss of death. That would have literally been the end of Liberace's career. Now, today, in a day of marriage equality, it's kind of hard, perhaps, to realize that there was a time when people actually thought that way. But there was, and I lived through it. I remember that. Now, even though Liberace won that case, factually, Liberace was gay. He died of AIDS, sadly. When he died, his boyfriend, there was no, obviously, marriage at that time, so it was his boyfriend, wrote a very touching biography, which I read, of Liberace, where he talked about their life together, their experiences and whatnot. So Liberace was actually gay. Perhaps most surprising of all was Rock Hudson. Rock Hudson was one of the most well-known leading men of my generation. And nobody knew that Rock Hudson was gay. Rock Hudson was a very macho guy. He always had a woman with him in the movies that he did. When he died, it came out that he was gay. That surprised everyone. One, because he was very macho, which meant that he didn't fit the stereotype, and of course, very few people fit stereotypes, but certainly Rock Hudson didn't. But then people thought the guy was a leading man. And all that time, when he was a leading man, he was also a gay man. So around that time is when people began to think about the issue of sexual identity, orientation, or preference. And that's about when people began to change their minds on that subject, until we've reached the present, where at least for now, you know, assuming the Supreme Court does not change its mind, which is a possibility, although I think perhaps not a strong one, but a possibility, right now that gays and lesbians can get married. There was a brief period where right after the Supreme Court decision was made, there were some justices of the peace who refused, and other people who were officials who refused to give out marriage licenses, but that lasted a few weeks or months, and that's all gone. So that issue is no longer with us. So we have made a lot of changes. I would say, with respect to issues of sex and gender, perhaps the two most successful social movements have been the gay rights movement and the feminist movement. So we'll finish up by talking about feminism. Feminism is a very complex subject. There is more than one type of feminism. In the academy, among professors, we talk about many, many, many types of feminism. If you want to read a list that I put together of some of them, you can go to markfoster.org/lib.html. That's markfoster.org/lib.html. And there are many, many, many types of feminism. There's liberal feminism, there's radical feminism, there's socialist feminism, there's eco-feminism. I mean, there are many, many, many types. And they're all very, very different. Some people who don't like feminism have tried to put all feminists in a box. But that's not fair to anybody. Because like anyone else, all feminists are different. And all feminisms are different. There are so many different types of feminism. I consider myself to be a feminist, to be honest. I support feminism. Many men are pro-feminist men, and I am one of them. I've also engaged with people who have very different views, and I'm certainly open to them as well, and I've had conversations with students who have very different views as well, and I'm certainly willing to have an open-ended conversation with them as well. Okay, so that ends the lecture for this week. Hope you have a good time, and speak with you next week.